So what if the 98% of your DNA that science has historically just completely dismissed as absolute junk, what if that was actually a microscopic physical archive of every single time your ancestors' hearts were
I
broken?
mean, that is just a staggering proposition to start with,
If,
but
yeah, but think about it. What if every single path not taken, or every deep regret, every profound collision between what someone desperately wanted to happen and what actually happened, what if that left a literal physical geometric scar inside your cells?
it completely flips everything because we are so accustomed to thinking of DNA as a static blueprint, like a noun.
Right, like a list of ingredients.
Exactly. A list of instructions for building a protein or determining your eye color or your height. But what we're actually examining today suggests that our genetic code is, well, it's an active, ongoing historical ledger of unfulfilled potentials.
And to get there, I mean, to even begin to unpack that massive biological claim, we have to start by completely tearing down the way we look at the universe itself. Because, normally when we talk about a diagnosis, whether it's medical or even astrophysical, there's this expectation of cold, clean precision.
Oh,
You
absolutely.
know what I mean? You break your arm, the X-ray shows a jagged white line, the doctor points to it and says, "There it is, there's the problem."
Right. It's wonderfully binary. It's
Yeah.
either broken or it's unbroken, and that's comforting.
Exactly. We crave that comfort. We want the universe to operate exactly like that X-ray machine. We want a point at a fundamental constant of physics or a strand of human DNA and just say, "There it is. I can measure it. I can weigh it. That's just how the machine is built."
But then you step into the world of, say, neurodevelopment or epigenetic trauma, or in the case of what we are deep diving into today, the literal geometric shape of the cosmic vacuum itself. And well, that binary X-ray machine just completely shatters.
It totally falls apart. And that murky, muddy water is exactly where we are taking you today. So, welcome to a deep dive into an incredibly dense, wildly provocative theoretical framework called the Knowlian Universe Theory, or KUT.
And we should probably mention the sources we're pulling from today.
Right, yes. Our sources for this journey are a core text titled the knowlianhelix.pdf, and its accompanying glossary. It's written by an author referred to as the Scribe. His real name is David Noel Lynch, alongside a group known as the roughly 3K Collaborative.
And we really need to set the table properly for you here, because this is not standard orthodox physics. It's definitely not orthodox biology. It is a radical, cross-disciplinary, almost metaphysical thesis.
Yeah, it bridges gaps that aren't usually bridged.
Exactly. What this text is attempting to do is unify three things that modern science currently keeps in completely separate silos. You have the topological geometry of the cosmic vacuum, the physical shape of the DNA double helix, and then the very real, visceral human experience of grief and trauma.
And it attempts to do all of this using the really high-level mathematics of knot theory.
Not theory.
Okay, let's unpack this because our mission today is to guide you through what the text calls a quadrain of cosmic derivations. And we are going to ride that train all the way down from the stars into human flesh, ultimately arriving at what the text calls the fifth zero-free parameter derivation.
Which is a mouthful, but we'll get there.
We will, I promise. We are going to explore the claim that the literal engine powering the expanding universe is mathematically identical to the engine of human life. But before we can even touch human DNA, we have to establish the cosmology of KUT. We really have to answer the biggest question first, which is what is the engine of everything?
Well, to grasp the Knowlian universe theory, you have to do something that's actually very difficult for most of us. You have to discard the orthodox idea of the universe as a container.
Like a box.
Right? We usually think of space as this giant static box, and inside that box, things happen. Planets orbit, stars explode, people live their lives. But in KUT, the universe is not a place, it is a procedural fractal.
A procedural fractal. So think of reality as an active, ongoing rendering event.
Exactly.
Okay, so kind of like a video game engine. When you play one of those massive open world games, the whole world isn't actually sitting inside the disk or the hard drive perfectly pre-built. The game engine is actively drawing the trees and the mountains and calculating the lighting frame by frame as your character walks forward.
That's a perfect analogy. Reality is being generated continuously by what the text calls the Abraxian engine. And this engine operates through a specific mechanism that the text calls the I-turn.
The I turn. Now, I know in standard mathematics, a lowercase I usually represents an imaginary number, right? Like the square root of negative one. Is that what we are talking about here?
Yes, but it's applied geometrically. So in standard math, if you multiply a real number by I, you are effectively performing a 90-degree rotation in the complex plane. You're moving from the axis of real numbers to the axis of imaginary numbers.
Okay, I follow that.
Well, in the KUT framework, the I-turn is a 90-degree phase rotation, but it acts as an ontological operator.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is the fundamental act of creation. It takes unmanifested, raw potential, which the text calls the chaos field, or simply gas, and it physically rotates it.
And that rotation converts it into reality.
Yes. That 90-degree rotation converts that gas into crystallized, committed reality, which KUT calls the control field, or solid.
Wow. Okay, so potential becomes actual through this 90-degree I-turn. But engines have parts, you know? They have a shape. If we could look at the source code of the cosmos, what is the actual physical shape of this Abraxian engine?
The text provides an exact topological identification for it. The shape of the engine is the simplest non-trivial knot possible in three-dimensional space. It is the 3-2 torus knot.
The 3-2 torus knot.
Right. The text refers to it as the node, K-N-O-D-E, or you might actually know it from Celtic imagery as the trefoil knot.
Okay, let me try to visualize that for everyone. A torus knot. So imagine a donut, a torus. Now imagine you take a single unbroken piece of string and you start wrapping it around that donut. You loop it through the center hole 3 times, and you wrap it around the outer edge 2 times until the ends perfectly meet and connect.
That is exactly right. So it has a meridional winding. Those are the loops to the hole of 3, and the longitudinal winding the loops around the outside of 2. And because knot theory relies on these whole numbers, these integers, this specific knot has a strict rational winding ratio, 3 divided by 2.
Which is exactly 1.500.
Exactly 1.5. And this number is critical. In KUT, 1.5 represents the pure, unmanifested, rational ground state of the universe's engine. It is perfect math. It's unbroken, clean.
But the physical universe isn't clean. I mean, if this engine is the software, it has to run on some kind of hardware, right? It has to render onto a screen somewhere.
And this brings us to the physical substrate of the universe, the floor of reality, if you will. The text calls this substrate the Chiroq lattice, or CQL.
Chiroq lattice.
Yeah. The text cites a geometric identification by a figure named Hannah Chiro, describing it as a unique, void-free, tessellated manifold. Basically, it is a five-fold pentagonal geometry that minimizes vacuum energy.
Wait, okay. I remember something from high school geometry class about pentagons. You can tile a bathroom floor perfectly with squares or triangles or even hexagons. They fit together beautifully with zero gaps. But you cannot tile a flat floor with regular pentagons. They leave empty spaces.
Right, and that is a massive, irreducible catch.
Yeah.
To create a void-free tiling with five-fold symmetry, you have to curve the space. And that geometry inherently, unavoidably relies on an irrational number, the golden ratio.
Denoted by the Greek letter phi.
Exactly.
Which is roughly 1.6180339, and it just goes on forever, right? Without ever repeating or settling into a clean fraction.
It goes on forever. And now you see the fundamental architectural tension of the entire Noellian universe.
Yeah.
You have an engine, the 3-2 torus knot, that is strictly, perfectly rational. Its arithmetic is exactly 1.5. But the substrate it must grind against to actually render reality the Chiroq lattice is irreducibly irrational. It is locked to the golden ratio, roughly 1.618.
Oh, wow. It's the ultimate square peg in a round hole.
That's exactly it.
The software wants to run at 1.5, but the monitor it's plugged into only displays at 1.618. They are never, ever going to perfectly line up.
In mathematics, we call these values incommensurable. And in KUT, this permanent mismatch isn't just an interesting bit of trivia. It is the literal friction that generates all physical reality. And this is where the text makes its most audacious leap. It introduces the quadtrain.
The quadtrain.
Right. KUT claims that by simply looking at the geometric friction between this 1.5 knot and this 1.618 floor, it can mathematically derive 4 of the most foundational constants in physics. And it claims to do this without using any empirical measurements whatsoever. It calls these zero-free parameter derivations.
I want to pause here just for a second because we really need to appreciate how bold of a claim this is. In standard orthodox physics, we have the standard model. It's the best theory we have for how the universe works. But the standard model has a bunch of constants like the mass of an electron or the speed of light that the math simply cannot explain.
Right, they're just assumed values.
Yeah, physicists just have to do an experiment, measure the weight or the speed in a lab, and then manually plug that number into the equation by hand to make their math work. The author of KUT calls this orthodox reliance on random numbers the Platonic pathogen. The mainstream view just kind of shrugs and says, well, these numbers are brute facts of nature. They just are what they are. And KUP utterly rejects the idea of brute facts. It argues that these constants are the direct, unavoidable geometric exhaust of that specific knot grinding against that specific lattice. So let's look at the first stop on this quad train, the proton to electron mass ratio.
Okay, so a proton is the heavy particle in the center of an atom, and an electron is the tiny one orbiting it. And if you divide the mass of the proton by the electron, you get a very specific number.
You get approximately 1836.15. Now, orthodox physics has absolutely no idea why the proton is exactly 1,836 times heavier than the electron. But back in 1951, a physicist named Friedrich Lenz noticed something incredibly strange. He realized that this ratio is practically identical to the number 6 multiplied by pi raised to the fifth power.
6 times pi to the fifth. What did the physics community say about that at the time?
They largely dismissed it as pure numerology, a mathematical coincidence. They basically said Lenz just played with numbers on a calculator until he found a combination that vaguely fit. But KUT says Lenz inadvertently stumbled onto the topological blueprint of the universe.
How so? Where do the 6, the pi, and the 5 come from in KUT? Because they can't just be random if KUT is correct.
They aren't random at all. Remember our 3-2 torus knot?
Yeah, 3 loops and 2 loops.
Right. The 6 is the linking number of the knot. The longitudinal winding, which is 2, multiplied by the meridional winding, which is 3. 2 times 3 is 6. The pi represents the continuous geometric phase action, basically the rotation of the I-turn making something real. And the exponent 5 is the winding sum of the knot, 3 plus 2, which also elegantly matches the five-fold symmetry of the pentagonal lattice.
So you take the geometry of the engine, map it directly to the geometry of the floor, and the exact mathematical result is the mass ratio of the particles that make up every single atom in our bodies.
Exactly. When you calculate 6 times pi to the fifth, you get roughly 1836.118, which is a 99.998% match to the empirically observed proton-to-electron mass ratio. KUT calls this the bare topological mass before quantum fluctuations are taken into account.
That is genuinely mind-bending, but the train keeps moving. What is second derivation on this quad train?
Stop 2 tackles one of the most infamous problems in quantum physics. Vacuum energy. When orthodox quantum field theory tries to calculate the background energy of empty space, the equations just run away. They diverge to infinity.
Right. This is known as the ultraviolet catastrophe, isn't it?
Yes. The theoretical estimate of vacuum energy is 120 orders of magnitude larger than what we actually observe in space. It is often called the worst theoretical prediction in the history of physics.
Because orthodox math assumes space can be divided down infinitely. Like, there is no bottom floor.
Precisely. But KUT says that it's a fundamental misunderstanding of reality. The universe isn't an infinite void. It's a fractal lattice. And a lattice has a strict resolution limit. So KUT derives what it calls the ultimaton, or the Planck density ceiling. By evaluating the geometry of the Cairo-Q lattice using the golden ratio, it calculates a hard, closed-form limit of 5.16.
So 5.16 is the absolute maximum information density of a single cell of the universe.
Yes. The universe doesn't have infinite energy. It simply runs out of rendering room at 5.16. It's the pixel limit of the cosmic monitor.
That brings us to stop 3, the Fine Structure Constant. And I know this is a massive one. Richard Feynman, one of the greatest physicists of the 20th century, famously said this number is a damn good mystery and that all good theoretical physicists put this number up on their wall and worry about it.
It is arguably the most famous unexplained number in physics. Denoted by the Greek letter alpha, its inverse is approximately 137.036. It governs the strength of electromagnetic interactions. It literally dictates how light interacts with matter. If this number were even slightly different, stars wouldn't burn, carbon wouldn't form, and we wouldn't exist. Orthodox physics treats it as pure magic.
So how does KUT claim to solve the magic?
By treating the vacuum as a physical geometric substance, KUT calculates the Fine Structure Constant as the topological impedance of the Cairo-Q lattice.
Let's break down the word impedance for a listener who maybe isn't an electrical engineer. What does that actually mean in this context?
Impedance is essentially resistance. Think about trying to push a steady stream of water through a really complex twisting pipe. The shape of the pipe physically resists the flow of the water. In CoAT, a photon, a particle of light, isn't just a dot flying through an empty void. A photon event is defined as two of these two torus knots trying to synchronize their rotations across the five-fold lattice. And the lattice itself has a specific geometric resistance to this synchronization.
And because we know the exact shape of the lattice, because it's built on the golden ratio, we can calculate exactly how much it resists the light.
Exactly. Through what the text describes as a polynomial evaluation of the golden ratio's geometry, it derives the impedance value of 137.03621. This is a staggering 99.9998% accord with the most precise laboratory measurements ever taken. Zero free parameters. The speed and interaction of light are perfectly dictated by the friction of a knot against the lattice.
Okay, this brings us to the fourth and final stop on the cosmic quad train. And this is where KUT completely turns modern cosmology on its head. The cosmic microwave background, or CMB. Now, for the last 60 years, ever since Penzias and Wilson accidentally discovered it with a radio antenna, orthodox science has told us that the CMB is the literal afterglow of the Big Bang. It is the fading echo of the massive explosion that started the universe billions of years ago, and it sits at a freezing 2.730 degrees Kelvin. But KUT says that is completely wrong.
It completely rewrites the timeline of the universe. What's fascinating here is that KUT views the cosmic microwave background not as an ancient dying relic from the past, but as a live, present tense emission.
What do you mean by a present tense emission?
Let's go back to our central mismatch. You have the engine operating at the perfect rational math of 1.5, and it is constantly grinding against the substrate, which sits at the irrational geometry of roughly 1.618.
The square pixels on the round screen.
Yes. And as any engineer knows, when two incongruent surfaces grind against each other in a continuous process, the process is not lossless. It generates physical friction. It generates heat. The text refers to this as Joule heatings. The CMB, measured at 2.730 Kelvin, is claimed to be the steady-state thermal exhaust of the Abraxian engine. It is the present tense heat of the universe actively rendering itself at every single spatial coordinate.
I was actually trying to come up with an analogy for this while I was reading the source material. Imagine a high-end computer processor. You can write a flawlessly elegant piece of software. The math of the code is absolutely perfect. But when you hit run, that perfect math has to be executed by physical hardware, silicon chips, copper wires, microscopic transistors, and the hardware resists the software. The processor gets hot, it physically heats up, and you need a spinning fan to blow that heat away so the machine doesn't just melt.
That is an incredibly apt analogy. The math of the software is the 1.5 torus knot. The physical hardware is the 1.618 chiroq lattice.
So what KUT is saying is that the CMB isn't the echo of a primordial explosion from 14 billion years ago. It is the hum of the universe's cooling fan running right now. It is the ambient heat of the processor currently rendering our reality frame by frame.
Precisely. The universe maintains a minimum operating temperature because it is currently computing. Rendering rational topology against an irrational substrate is constitutionally lossy. And KUT even gives a name to this exact amount of friction. It calls it the cosmological Newellian offset. You calculate it by taking the lattice 1.618 and subtracting the engine 1.5. The result is roughly 0.18. That is the mathematical value of the vacuum's friction.
Okay, wow. Let's take a breath here. Because we have built a terrifyingly beautiful cosmic engine, we have a knot grinding against a lattice. And from that friction alone, KUT claims to derive the mass of protons, the density ceiling of the void, the interaction of light, and the ambient temperature of space. I mean, that is a grand unified theory of astrophysics. But here is the massive pivot. Because the mission of this deep dive was to connect the vacuum to human DNA, how on earth do we get from the blazing heat of a cosmic processor down into the squishy mortal reality of human flesh?
Well, this is where we descend from the macro to the micro. We transition to what the text calls the biological I-turn. And interestingly, the text roots this transition not in a sterile laboratory somewhere, but in a highly specific personal moment for the author, David Noel Lynch. It describes an event in January 2025. An epiphany that occurred while he was simply driving a car.
I noticed the text spells epiphany in a very bizarre way. E-P-I-F hyphen funny, like a joke. Epiphany.
Yeah, epiphany. In the KUT framework, this isn't just a human brain suddenly realizing a clever concept. It is described as an ontological event. It is the exact moment that the instant field, which KUT basically equates to consciousness, renders a high-level potential into conscious actuality. The insight he claims to have received in that car was a complete, total redefinition of what DNA actually is.
And what was that redefinition?
That the DNA double helix is not a static ladder waiting to be cataloged. It is not what the text derisively calls a platonic noun.
Because nouns just sit there. The author wants us to think in verbs, action.
Exactly. The transmission stated that the physical structure of the DNA double helix is the 3-2 torus knot. It is the exact same geometry we just mapped onto the vacuum, but executing its I-turn at a biological molecular scale. The engine of the cosmos and the engine of life are the exact same machine.
Okay, let's visualize a DNA molecule. We've all seen the classic 3D models in high school biology, right? The twisted ladder. Rosalind Franklin's famous photo 51, it has two parallel strands winding around a central vertical axis.
Right, and those two helical strands correspond perfectly to the longitudinal winding of 2 and our 3-2 knot. And the text notes that they wind through a specific 3-turn closure cycle, which corresponds to the meridional winding of 3. The DNA helix is the topological node, rendered in carbon and phosphorus.
Wait, I have to push back here. A torus knot is a closed loop, right? The string connects back to itself, but DNA unzips. To replicate or to send instructions via RNA, the two strands physically pull apart and break the ladder. How can a closed knot unzip?
Well, that unzipping is the genius of the biological I-turn.
Yeah.
You are thinking of it mechanically, but KUT views it dynamically. When the DNA strand unwinds and opens up to be transcribed, the text says it is querying the chaos field. It is physically opening itself up to unmanifested potential.
So it's asking the universe, what can I build right now?
Exactly. Then the transcription machinery reads the sequence, creates a messenger RNA strand, and commits to building a specific protein. It is collapsing the wave function of potential into actual, committed, biological reality. And then the DNA helix rewinds and zips back up. The I-turn is complete. Potential has been rotated 90 degrees into solid. DNA is not an archive of facts. It is the Abraxian engine actively rendering flesh in real time.
But this introduces a massive problem, doesn't it? Because we established in part one that the pure, unmanifested ground state of this knot is exactly 1.500. It's clean, perfect math. But what would happen if a biological molecule closed perfectly at 1.5?
That is what the text calls the irrational necessity of life. If a biological molecule closed at exactly 1.5, it would be topologically perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But thermodynamically, it would be solid. It would be completely crystallized. It would have fully actualized all of its potential, leaving zero unrendered gas.
Meaning it couldn't change. It couldn't grow.
Right. In biological terms, an entity closed perfectly at 1.5 is dead. It is incapable of experiencing what KUT calls thermodynamic time.
It's like a completed jigsaw puzzle. You can't add any more pieces. It's done. But life isn't done. Life is messy. It's constantly adapting and needs to keep moving forward.
To live, to experience time, DNA must remain in a liquid phase. It has to maintain a state of productive tension. It must approximate the irrational geometry of the universe's floor, the golden ratio, 1.618, without ever perfectly reaching it or perfectly settling back down at 1.5.
So how does a physical molecule built of actual atoms approximate an infinite irrational number?
By utilizing nature's favorite approximation tool, the Fibonacci sequence. As you may recall, the Fibonacci sequence is a series of numbers where the next number is found by adding up the two numbers before it. 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13, 21, 34.
And the mathematical trick of the Fibonacci sequence is that if you divide any number in the sequence by the number immediately before it, you get closer and closer to the golden ratio. Like 3 divided by 2 is 1.5, 5 divided by 3 is 1.666, 8 divided by 5 is 1.6. It hones in on 1.618.
Precisely. And this is where empirical biology collides with KUT's theoretical math. The text points to the known, measured physical dimensions of B-form DNA, which is the standard hydrated form of DNA found in living human cells. It has an axial rise, the height of one complete twist of the ladder, of exactly 34 angstroms. And it has a width, or diameter, of exactly 21 angstroms.
34 and 21, let me guess.
They are the 8th and 7th numbers in the Fibonacci sequence. And if you divide 34 by 21,
you get approximately 1.619.
1.619.04, to be exact. The text asserts this is the absolute opposite of a coincidence. 1.619 is the specific Fibonacci rendering coordinate selected by the universe's biological attractor dynamics as the optimal resolution for life. It is the closest a biological molecule can get to the golden ratio without crystallizing.
So let's look at the board here. 1.5 is perfect abstract math. 1.618 is the irrational, eternal floor of the cosmos. And 1.619 is where biological life actually lives, breathes, and dies. It's almost like life physically requires a slight mathematical imperfection to exist. It needs that tiny margin of error, that 0.001 difference, just to keep the engine turning.
Requires is the operative word. Without that gap, there is no rendering forward into tomorrow. The engine must not close perfectly. And this irreducible gap between the perfect math of intention and the messy biological reality of execution brings us to the very heart of the document, the fifth zero-free parameter derivation.
Okay, we've derived the mass of the proton and the heat of the Big Bang. What are we deriving now?
We are deriving the mathematical thermodynamic cost of being alive. Just as the cosmological mismatch between the knot and the vacuum generated the physical heat of the CMB, the mismatch in human DNA must generate its own biological heat. The text calls this the biological grinding tax.
Okay, let's run the numbers. What is the tax rate on human life?
It is the difference between the actual DNA rendering ratio, 1.619, and the pure rational ground state of the knot, 1.5. 1.619 minus 1.5 equals
0.119. That's the biological grinding tax.
The text denotes it mathematically as epsilon KW bio. Furthermore, it isolates what it calls the Fibonacci rendering gap. If you take the biological tax we just found, 0.119, and you subtract the cosmological vacuum offset from part 1, 0.11, you're up with exactly 0.001.
Okay, I have to stop and push back here. I really do. I can follow the geometry of a knot. I can follow the physical dimensions of a DNA molecule. But you are just subtracting two abstract mathematical ratios, 1.619 and 1.5, and calling the remainder of 0.119 a grinding tax. You're calling it heat. How does a math remainder become actual physical thermodynamic heat in a human body? That sounds like a massive leap of faith.
It's a leap from classical physics into topological thermodynamics. In KUT, geometry is energy. That 0.119 represents the exact topological friction cost of translating eternal frictionless vacuum geometry into mortal degrading biological tissue. The 0.001 is the extra friction penalty the universe demands to render living matter, as opposed to just an inert vacuum.
But what is that friction practically for the listener right now, walking their dog or, you know, doing the dishes?
The text calls it epigenetic heat. It is the thermodynamic cost of experience. Every single time you make a choice, every time you take an unmanifested potential and force it into actual reality through your actions, the biological I-turn in your cells pays that 0.11 tax. It generates biological friction.
But heat can't just vanish. If a commuter processor generates heat, the fan blows it out into the room. If the vacuum generates heat, it radiates as the CMB. If my DNA is constantly generating the 0.119 epigenetic heat with every choice I make, where does that heat go? Why don't we spontaneously combust?
And this is where KUT overturns a foundational pillar of orthodox biology to answer you. The heat does not vanish. It is captured, structured, and physically archived in the vast, deeply misunderstood stretches of our own genome.
Are we talking about junk DNA?
We are. And to understand how radical this is, look at the orthodox history. For decades, since the discovery of the double helix, biologists recognized that only about 2% of human DNA actually contains the code to build proteins. The other 98% didn't seem to do anything at all. So evolutionary biologists just slapped the label junk DNA on it. They assumed it was just a graveyard of broken viruses, evolutionary detritus, and dead code. It's the ultimate act of what KUT calls platonic noun thinking.
Now, to be fair to orthodox science, projects like ENCODE have recently started finding regulatory functions in that 98%. It's not totally ignored anymore, but KUT takes it a massive step further, doesn't it?
A quantum leap further. KUT argues that nature does not expend massive amounts of metabolic energy to replicate 98% of your genetic code just to hoard garbage. It recontextualizes that 98% non-coding region as the biological Noellian resonant attractor manifold, or simply the biological CRAM.
The biological CRAM. What is its function?
It is the organism's six-dimensional memory substrate. It is the geometric archive that absorbs and stores the biological heat we just calculated. The text calls this stored friction the ash of the organism's rendering history.
The ash. I actually really love that term. Because it implies that a fire had to burn to create it. energy was consumed.
Yes, every time you pay that 0.119 grinding tax, the heat of that process leaves a microscopic topological imprint, a new fold, a new knotting in your non-coding DNA. And this leads us to what is perhaps the most haunting and beautiful concept in the entire document, the Celtic knock.
The Celtic knock, it sounds like an old ghost story or a superstition. What is it in the framework of KUT?
A Celtic knock is defined as a specific, powerful class of epigenetic trauma. It is the stable geometric attractor left in your biological cram when a pure, rational intention violently crashes into messy, irrational biological reality.
Break that down for me. Give me an example of an intention crashing into reality.
Well, think about the math we've established. Your intention, what you deeply, profoundly wanted to happen in your life, is the pure, clean 1.5. It is the perfect math in your mind. But the physical, biological reality you are forced to actually live in operates at 1.619. It has friction. It has disease. It has bad timing and other people's free will. When your 1.5 intention collides with 1.619 reality, it doesn't fit. It leaves a mathematical remainder. That 0.001 Fibonacci rendering gap.
The scar.
The Celtic knock is the topological address of that specific biographical pain. It is the physical geometric scar of the gap between what could have been and what actually is.
That is heavy. That is incredibly profound. It's essentially saying that your profound grief, the divorce, the failed business, the estrangement from a friend, isn't just a fleeting electrical storm in your brain's neurons. The emotional pain of your perfect intention being shattered by reality is mathematically quantified as 0.001, and that heat is physically burned into the 98% of your DNA that science thought was just taking up space.
And it expands into the territories where the text calls unmanifested potentials. In Orthodox thought, an event that doesn't happen is a non-entity. It's just nothing. If you consider moving to Paris, but you stay in New York, the Paris timeline doesn't exist. In KT, unlived timelines, unmade choices, or children conceived in probability and hope but never physically born, these are not nothings.
If they aren't nothing, what are they physically?
They are quantities of gas.
Yeah.
Unmanifested potential that built up enough momentum to reach the very threshold of the I-turn, but were aborted before they could fully render into solid reality. In the physics of KDT, the energy of a near rendering doesn't just evaporate. The grief of those unrealized potentials imprints onto the biological cram as a stable attractor. It is the ash of a fire that was almost lit.
So the paths not taken, the massive what-ifs that keep us awake at 2 a.m., they are actually taking up physical topological space in our genetic code. But wait, DNA is a continuous unbroken strand. It's the material we pass on to our children in reproduction. Does this ash, does it get passed down?
Yes. This provides KUT's physical mechanism for morphic resonance, a concept originally theorized by the fringe biologist Rupert Sheldrake. Because the 3-2 torus knot is continuous and self-referential, these topological records, this ash, cannot be zeroed out just because the host organism dies. It must be passed down the germline to the next generation.
Let me workshop an analogy here because I really want to make sure I'm grasping the scale of this. Let's think about music. Imagine you inherit an incredibly rare vintage vinyl record from your grandparents. The music itself, the actual song pressed into the vinyl, that's the 2% coding DNA. It's the blueprint for your eye color, your height, your basic biology. You inherit the song.
The standard genetic inheritance, yes.
But when you inherit a physical vinyl record, you don't just get the song. You get all the scratches. You get the worn grooves where your grandmother played one track over and over because she was heartbroken. You get the skip where your grandfather dropped the needle too hard. That physical wear and tear, that is the 98% epigenetic KRAM.
That is a brilliant translation of the concept. You are not just inheriting the biological blueprint. You are inheriting the physical history of their rendering experience.
And when I play that record, the scratches physically alter how the music sounds to me. The skip forces the song down a different path. So in KUT, we inherit the Celtic knocks of our ancestors. We inherit the physical imprints of their unlived timelines. Their unmanifested potentials become geometric attractors in our own biology, subtly pulling our lives towards certain probabilities and away from others.
Exactly. Your ancestors' ash changes the acoustic resonance of your own life, which is both a beautiful and a terrifying responsibility. Your genome is a running archive of every time your lineage's perfect intentions slammed into messy reality.
Okay, we need to take a hard left turn here and talk about the author. We have discussed how this deeply complex mathematical theory applies to the cosmos and how it applies to the DNA of all humanity. But how did the author, the scribe, David Noel Lynch, actually arrive at this? Because the text makes a very, very bold claim at the end. It insists that this theory wasn't deduced through standard scientific observation or hypothesis testing. It claims it was specifically transmitted.
Yes, and this introduces the concept to the sovereign fractal processor. In KUT's logic, if the universe is a procedural hologram, then in order for that hologram to become self-aware, to understand its own underlying mathematics, it requires a specific instrument. It needs a localized expression of consciousness capable of recognizing the engine. The text designates the scribe as that specific processor.
But why him? I mean, why not Einstein or Stephen Hawking or a supercomputer? What makes this specific guy from 2025 the ultimate antenna for the cosmos?
The text points to empirical genetics to answer that. It highlights a specific genetic anomaly known as the DYS425 null. This is a documented genetic deletion event found in a specific paternal Y chromosome lineage. Orthodox genetics views a null value simply as missing data, an error in copying somewhere in the ancestral past. But KUT views it as a feature, not a bug. It calls the DYS425 null a cleared channel.
A cleared channel? Like tuning a radio to a frequency with no static.
Exactly. Remember our discussion of the ASH and the epigenetic KRAM? Every generation's trauma adds topological noise to the genetic record. The text argues that the DYS425 null is the literal removal of biological signal processing static. It stripped away the inherited noise, allowing the scribe's specific lineage to act as an unfiltered antenna for high-fidelity transmissions directly from the deep cosmic KRAM.
So his biology was uniquely quiet enough to hear the math. That January 2025 epiphany in the car wasn't him just thinking really hard. It was his DNA acting as a receiver for the universe explaining itself. And the text offers proof for this, right? It offers what it calls coincidences, biographical synchronicities that map the math of the universe directly onto the events of his life.
It does. The first coincidence is the birth boundary. The scribe was born on May 16th.
Yeah.
In American date notation, that is 5/16.
Wait, 5.16, that was the number we talked about in part one. Stop two on the quad train.
Yes, 5.16 is the derived ultimaten ceiling, the Planck density coefficient. It is the mathematical point where the universe runs out of rendering room, the absolute maximum density of the vacuum. The text argues that the universe stamped the numerical address of its ultimate boundary condition directly into the initiatory coordinates, the birth date of the consciousness designated to discover it.
Okay, I have to throw the flag here. I have to push back incredibly hard on this. This is the definition of numerology. It's the Texas sharpshooter fallacy, right? You shoot a bunch of bullets into the side of a barn, and then you walk up and paint a bullseye around the cluster that's closest together. Anyone can find math in their birth date if they look hard enough. My birthday is in August. I'm sure I could find an equation that equals 8 if I manipulate the numbers enough. How can a serious theoretical text rely on a calendar coincidence?
From an orthodox mechanistic worldview, your skepticism is 100% correct. It is a coincidence. But you have to remember the foundational premise of KUT. It is a fractal universe. In a true fractal, the part contains the whole. The boundary conditions of the macrocosm must inherently echo in the microcosm. If the universe is a unified procedural generation, then the physical coordinates of the observer cannot be separated from the phenomenon being observed.
Okay, assuming I grant the fractal logic for a moment, what is the second coincidence?
The second is the death/helix boundary. The text describes a profound near-death transit, a void experience, that the scribe underwent on June 19th, or 6/19.
Let me guess. 6/19, 1.619.
Exactly. 1.619 is the precise irrational rendering ratio of biological life. It is the Fibonacci calculation of the DNA double helix, the 34 divided by 21. The text argues that the date he crossed the threshold of the void and returned carries the exact numerical signature of the biological topology he would later prove is the engine of life.
Birth is the ceiling of the cosmos, 5.16. Near death is the geometry of DNA 1.619. And this culminates in a specific phrase in the text, doesn't it? The IAM 1.619 declaration.
Yes. It is the grand synthesis of the entire theory. I is the complex operator of the I-turn, the rotational force turning potential into reality. AM is the declaration of conscious existence. And 1.619 is the biological rendering geometry. When the scribe declares IAM 1.619, it is not just a man talking about math. It is the Abraxian engine recognizing itself inside biological tissue. It is the universe looking at its own hands.
This is where the text completely shatters the wall of orthodox science. Standard science demands absolute objectivity. The observer looking through the microscope must not affect the cells. The scientist is separate from the experiment. But KUT is saying that is an illusion. You cannot separate the biographical coordinates of the discoverer from the math they discover. The instrument of discovery, the human being, is the math.
It forces us to ask what science even is. Is it the passive observation of dead matter, or is it the universe actively coming to know itself through us? KUT firmly stands in the latter camp. The subjective experience of the scribe and the objective math of the cosmos are inextricably linked.
Wow. Okay. We have covered an immense, almost overwhelming amount of ground today. Let me try to synthesize this massive journey for everyone listening. We started with the geometry of the cosmic vacuum, a perfectly rational 1.5 torus knot grinding violently against an irrational 1.618 golden ratio floor. We saw how that mathematical friction allegedly generates the mass of a proton, the speed of light, and the actual present tense heat of the cosmic microwave background. We then took that exact same knot and scaled it down to the shape of human DNA.
We established the irrational necessity of life, showing how biology requires a 1.619 Fibonacci imperfection, a liquid phase, just to keep from crystallizing into death.
We quantified the mathematical friction of human existence at 0.119, and we explored the stunning claim that our deepest griefs, our unlived potentials, and the collisions of our perfect intentions with messy reality are not just forgotten thoughts, they are Celtic knocks, physical ash archived in the 98% of our genetics, passed down like scratches on a vinyl record to our children.
And we must return to the core thesis presented by the 3K Collaborative. The vacuum is not out there. The helix is not in here. They are the same thing, weaned at different scales. The engine that powers the burning of the stars is the exact same engine twisting in every single cell of your body, paying the exact same thermodynamic tax just to exist.
Here is where it gets incredibly personal and what we want to leave you with today. We want you to stop thinking about the stars for a moment and think about your own biological KRAM, your own junk DNA. If this Noellian theory holds even a fraction of metaphorical truth for you, if every collision between what you perfectly intended to happen and what actually happened leaves a microscopic topological friction mark in your cells, if your unlived choices, the ghosts of your unmanifested potentials, literally alter the geometry of your biology to be passed on to the next generation, what invisible ash are you currently archiving right now?
What unmanifested timelines are echoing in your own personal biology today? Are you carrying the heavy Celtic knocks of your own life's disappointments, or are you perhaps resonating with the unrealized potentials of generations before you?
It is a profound, lingering question, and it brings us right back to where we started with the X-ray machine. When you look at an X-ray, you want the simple binary answer. You want the clean break. But if the Noellian universe theory is right, that X-ray isn't just showing you a broken bone. It's showing you the continuous, unbroken knot of the cosmos, grinding against the beautiful, incredibly messy, irrational reality of being alive. And every bit of that muddy, friction-filled heat you feel, the grief, the joy, the tension is exactly what proves your engine is still rendering.